Hey everybody, this is Lisa Moore at the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is our March show and it's 12 months now since we went down into lockdown. So we've done 12 shows. This will be our 12th show online via Zoom. So we're still not back in the studio just yet, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel and hopefully very soon we will be back in at the flight deck recording all of our shows in the studio. So Helen, my lovely co-host, is here with me today, and our lovely female guests, because we are celebrating International Women's Day. And Helen, do you remember last year when we were asked to go and do a live show at the Brighton Dome?
Yep, just before the world went into chaos. Yeah, it was the last public event that I'd been to. It was absolutely rammed, wasn't it? And we didn't really know what to expect, but we had our setup, our desk and microphones right in the middle of the hall with the bustling noise around us, and we hosted our first ever live radio show.
It was mad, wasn't it? I remember we both looked at each other as we walked in, because I think Helen and I had this idea that we would be in a quiet little room somewhere in the back of the dome, and that our interview would take place in this quiet little room and people would just come in and say hello and that would be that. We didn't for one minute expect that we'd be right in the centre, right by the bar in the Brighton Dome, and there were hundreds of people. So it was a crazy event, but it was really great fun, wasn't it?
It was. And, you know, I look back on it with nostalgia because, you know, we knew that there was all of this stuff going on in the world, but we didn't quite know just how much it was going to impact us. And so I kind of look fondly at that version of me.
That naivety.
How little did she know?
Yeah, it was a wonderful event. And I remember coming out feeling really uplifted and buzzing from just meeting and interviewing some amazing women, and then going and looking at the 100 firsts. So there was, there was 100 pictures of women who were the first to do something within their field. And there was a portrait of each of these women in the Brighton Dome. And it was incredible.
Yeah. That was really inspiring, wasn't it? That was a lovely thing to do, to look at that. Such amazing pictures, very powerful. Really great to read up on all of those things. And a great way to end our time on that special day.
Absolutely was. Absolutely was. And we've got some amazing women here today who are going to be speaking. So I'm really, really looking forward to today's show. So the theme for International Women's Day this year is Choose to Challenge. So a challenged world is an alert world. Individually, we're all responsible for our own thoughts and actions. But we can all choose to challenge, to call out gender bias and inequality. And we can all choose to celebrate women's achievements here in the UK and across the world. And collectively, we can all help to create a more inclusive world. So from challenge comes change. So we have to put our hands up high to show that we're in and we choose to challenge. Helen, now I'm going to ask you the question. I know what I'm going to choose to challenge this year, but you know, what do you as a woman choose to challenge in 2021?
Well, when I was thinking about this in terms of my own content and my own focus for this topic, I really did reflect back on the last 12 months. And, you know, it's fair to say that everybody has been impacted by the pandemic. However, women have really been impacted. And, you know, there's been a lot of studies done, a lot of surveys that have shown that, you know, women in the main have been more likely to lose their jobs, have been more likely to have to take a back step again in their careers, have been more likely to sacrifice their business to look after their children at home. That's just the way it's gone. And so therefore, you know, people are saying that we've taken a few steps back in all of the strides we've been taking in terms of women's equality and flexible working and all of those amazing things that have happened. So really, I choose to challenge this year, you know, ourselves and, you know, the support, the government in really helping us to bounce back to where we were before. Mm-hmm. And I know that that can happen naturally. And I know that it will. I mean, gosh, just my kids being back at school for 2 days, the headspace that I have is absolutely incredible and unbelievable. I've got more done in 2 days than I did in 2 months. However, there's still going to be a residue of this. There's people have still lost jobs. People have still have to choose to take the back step. Women have had to choose to do that. So that's what I choose to challenge this year, for us to be able to bounce back to where we were before this happened.
Mm, absolutely. And to make strides forward. And I was just checking out a few stats before I came on, and it, you know, it's still only 38% of women hold management level positions in the UK. 38% is not much, is it really, when you think about it?
No. The last organisation I worked for before I left to build this business, there was a goal, 50-50 by 2020. And I know that goal hasn't been met. I know that there's definitely been improvements. And this is a large financial services organisation where, you know, hierarchy and patriarchy is quite rife because of the nature of the system and the structure.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's a great goal to strive for, but yet still women are underrepresented in senior positions.
Yeah. Well, we're challenging that a little bit today with the ladies that are coming on our show. So I'm going to invite our first guest to come onto the show and talk to us a little bit more. So I have the lovely Flo Powell and Alex Hankinson from Midnight Communications based here in Brighton. Two amazing women. And I've read their stories and I've spoken to them and understood a little bit more about, you know, how they came to take over as owners of Midnight Communications. And they took over ownership from another woman. So there's a really, really great story there. So Alex and Flo, welcome to the Brighton Business Show.
Thanks, Lisa. Thank you so much for having us. It's wonderful to be here.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Lovely to see you. Now, Flo, tell me a little bit more about Midnight Communications and how you and Alex came to take over that business.
So Alex and I have worked together at Midnight for many years. I'll have been at Midnight 8 years this year, and Alex, it will be 11 years this year that Alex has been in the business. So we were both account directors before the management buyout, and the business was run by a very well-known businesswoman called Caroline Brown. And she had started the business in 1995 and built it up. But she was thinking about her exit plan, even at the point when she interviewed myself and Alex, and had spoken to us both at our interviews, albeit 3 years apart, about our future goals and aspirations. And it was clear then that her exit plan was in the forefront of her mind. And when it came down to it, actually, we started seriously talking about it in September 2017. And it was quite a quick negotiation. And we signed and sealed in January 2018. So it was very quick, actually, when you think about it, that Alex and I were then propelled into the world of business ownership as joint managing directors of the agency. From a client perspective, it actually didn't make that much difference because we were still running the accounts, as we still are now. We're just running the business as well, as everything else. And that was a very, very steep learning curve of going from working in the business to working on the business. Mm-hmm. So year one in 2018 was all about getting to grips with everything that business ownership throws at you. And that's a whole program in its own, to be honest. there was a lot to learn. But I think, you know, for us, Midnight went from a one-headed beast to a two-headed beast. And actually, we wouldn't have it any other way. Mm. And we both remember very fondly the day that we went to the solicitor's office and signed the contract to buy Midnight. And we walked out of the solicitor's office and down the steps and looked at each other and said, "Did we just get married? Is that what happened?" And we've been very happy work wives ever since. And we fondly refer to each other as kind of the yin to each other's yang. And we couldn't do this without each other. And we're not sure how Carrie did it on her own for so many years, to be honest. But we're very, very proud of what she's chosen to do to fulfill her life's ambition to become a published author. She's got her first book out now. It's at City Books. It's called The Candlelit Menagerie. And wow, the second book is underway. And she's very proud of us in that we've been able to, you know, take her legacy onwards and keep the business alive and growing and successful. So yeah, year one was learning. Year two, we rebranded and kind of put our stamp on it. Year three was supposed to be our big growth year. And of course, COVID struck, which was challenging. Yeah. But we did, you know, we're very proud of how we survived and thrived actually and grew a little bit last year. And now this year, we've got our new strategy for winning new business as well. So it's been an extremely interesting journey already. And I can't quite believe we're in our fourth year already.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that with us, Flo. And Alex, getting married to Flo as a business partner has been fun, has it?
Absolutely. We wouldn't have it any other way. I think, as Flo said, you know, Caroline running the business on her own must have been really challenging at times. Exciting, exhilarating, yes, but also it can be quite lonely. So to have a business partner like Flo has just been absolutely fantastic. We lift each other up. There are times when one of us, you know, needs an extra boost and we're there to support each other. We're very different in terms of our personalities, but we really share the same ethos and values. And I think that just it's strong for the team because we have, you know, different aspects of our personality that we can bring to bear. Yeah. And it's a strength for our clients as well, because we have different skills that we can, you know, that we can utilize for their benefit.
Yeah. And I understand you both used to work up in London and you both, yes, decided that you wanted to have a different way of living and come back down to Brighton. And Alex, you've got two daughters, is that right?
Two daughters, yes. One is 8 and one is 10.
Lovely.
And I was working in London for over 10 years in PR agencies. And I was just about to take the next step up to joint managing director of the latest agency that I was with when we decided to have a family. And actually we were thinking about, should we move to Barcelona? Actually, that was one of the things that we were considering. My husband's from Spain and I've always loved languages and have lived abroad in Europe quite a lot. And we decided that we couldn't do that with a daughter on the way from our family's sake. So we thought something else beginning with B by the seaside. So we moved to Brighton, a place that we really loved and had visited numerous times before. And we just wanted a different quality of life really for our family and haven't looked back since at all.
No, that's amazing. And so I'll ask you both, and it doesn't matter who answers, is that PR, would you say that that is very dominated by men, or would you say it's a good mix? Or what's been your experience of inequality and equality within PR and communications?
It's heavily focused towards women, actually, which is fantastic. It's one of those industries where it does tend to be mostly women. I would say perhaps in more corporate communications roles, there may be a stronger representation amongst men, but it does tend to be more focused towards women.
And why do you think that is? Do you think we have different skills, different communication skills? We see things in a different way?
I guess that's always been one of those skills that women are said to be particularly strong in: communication, empathy, those soft skills that that women have, that I suppose it feels like a natural career progression for some women.
Yeah. How about yourself, Flo?
So yeah, I was up in London for many years as well. My previous career was actually in travel and tourism, and my heart goes out to all of my previous colleagues in that sector at the moment. It's been really, really tough. But I actually have family down here. I moved here in 1994. So when I started looking for opportunities in the city, my stepdad at the time said to me, look, if you want to work in PR and you want to work in Brighton, there's only one agency to go for, and that's Midnight. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed with Carrie and never looked back. And in terms of, yeah, PR is mostly dominated by women and very, very strong, independent female leaders in the PR industry, actually. And in some respects, that's a joy. In other respects, it can be a challenge. But, you know, I guess as an industry and as a sector, we buck the trend in that respect in terms of gender equality. At Midnight, there are 8 of us and 2 of those are men. So I guess it's quite unusual when other sectors hear that. And a lot of our clients are from very male-dominated sectors. We handle a lot of work in professional services, property and construction, and they tend to be incredibly male-dominated sectors. However, our main point of contact tends to be the marketing manager or marketing director for those businesses, and they all tend to be women. So we tend to be a female-led agency working predominantly with women, but those women are in a male-dominated sector.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? So what, you know, have either of you had to face anything difficult being a woman working in industry or working in, you know, working with people like the construction industry and things like that? Have you had any big challenges that have come out of what you do?
That's a big question. As a working woman, when I first started out in 2003, it's my first job out of university. And I would say my first sort of 5 to 10 years of working in the industry, I would say that I got treated like a PA, no matter what my job was.
Yeah.
In comparison to other male colleagues who weren't treated like that. And I think perhaps I was too quick to say yes to whatever was thrown my way. But that was also why I was able to climb the ladder so quickly, because I said yes to every opportunity that was thrown my way. But I think I was possibly doing the work of several people at the same time, perhaps. Mm. You know, that was definitely a challenge of, you know, say yes in order to get the opportunities, but perhaps don't say yes to things that perhaps aren't in your role.
Yeah.
I'd say as well that particularly when you're starting out in your career as a woman in PR or any sector probably, that there can be a natural tendency amongst clients to defer to, you know, if there is a male senior above you, that they will, even if you're the one running the campaign and you're the one that's got the expertise in that particular area, there can be just a natural, you know, let's check in with so-and-so, the male senior. Right. So I think starting out in an industry is difficult. You know, obviously as you progress up the ladder, you gain self-confidence, you have the skills, you have the experience to refer to, and then it's easier for you to gain that respect naturally. Mm. But I do feel for people that are at the beginning stages of the starting out.
Yeah.
And so we, Flo and I, always try to encourage people at midnight, actually, when they're new to the business or they're coming onto a client account, we say to them, you know, make your voice heard early on in the conversation. We sit down and we say, right, well, you know, there's a meeting. Here's the agenda. What point would you like to take, so that people feel ready to be able to contribute in all the ways that they can, but so that we give them space to do so? Because Flo and I and other members of the team have a natural tendency to jump in and, you know, to lead, but we want to give space to other people within the team to take that on, because we know how difficult it can be.
And I think, do you know, I think that's such a wonderful thing that you do that with your employees, because I think from my experience of working in a, you know, male dominated world when I was in the corporate world, that would never happen. It would be like the men would be in there and they would jump in. And but actually having that conversation with a new person to say, right, come on, let's help you and hold their hand. I think that's an amazing thing. And you must have a very gelled team that work really well together and are happy. I would imagine you have very happy employees.
I'd like to think so. They are absolutely incredible team. They are all so, so different, honestly. We all have very different skills, very different personalities, very different interests, but we all just seem to just gel so well together. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it does feel a bit like a family. And obviously we need to be careful at times that, you know, that we keep that professionalism and so on, but it does feel like a really lovely place to work. Yeah. I know one of our team actually mentioned last week on a staff meeting that we're having that actually when they came to apply for a position, they were actively looking to join a company that was led by women.
Fantastic. That's really fantastic. So I'm going to ask you both now, because the theme is to challenge, what what do you feel that you want to choose to challenge in 2021 in the same way I asked Helen?
Okay, well, I choose to challenge my own ideal of what a really great mother and business leader is. So I think it can be quite damaging, quite negative sometimes, this kind of idea of trying to have it all, especially if you have perfectionist tendencies as well. So personally, I'm challenging myself to be 100% present when I'm at work and 100% present when I'm at home with my family, which is quite difficult to do when you're in that role. Yeah. And I know that if I can fight my instinct just to do everything and say yes to everything, as Flo mentioned, then I will be a better mother and I will be a better business leader, and I'll be able to be more supportive for everybody at work. So I'm trying to prioritise things that only I can do. So it doesn't necessarily need to be me that writes that press release, but it does need to be me that's there to really spend time on one of our team members' appraisals and to give it all the consideration it needs. So I know if I can do that, then I'll be doing everybody the greatest service. And really importantly for me, it will make me a better role model for my daughters, because I know that they'll be looking to me as a mother, as a role model, and that they will need that to face all the challenges that they will have in their lives ahead of them as young women.
Absolutely agree. I've got two girls as well. They're slightly older than yours. They're 12, well, about to be 13 this weekend, and about to be 16. So yeah, I think I love that. I love that choose to challenge. It's that's fantastic. And Flo, how about you?
So my challenge this year is to remember to always be kind. And mental health hasn't been a taboo subject to talk about for a while now. It's never been a taboo subject at midnight to talk about. And we have totally transparent agenda at midnight. Anybody can come to us to talk about anything that they need to. And we have a lot of support packages in place to help people with their mental health. But I think it's really important to remember that you can never really know what's going on with somebody. You can never really understand what their situation might be. And, you know, there was a very big interview that aired on Sunday with Meghan and Harry, and a lot came out of that. And there's been a lot of criticism thrown their way since. And I think it's really important as a society that we remember to be kind and remember what's happened to, you know, some really sad cases like Caroline Flack. Just to remember that you never truly know what's going on with somebody else because you're not them, and to try and treat everybody with empathy and compassion and understanding. And on International Women's Day, I want to urge every female leader in business and every woman in business out there to build each other up and empower each other and treat each other with compassion and empathy, and to remember to be kind in 2021 and beyond.
Absolutely. Whoa. Oh, I'm almost feeling a bit teary now with both of those. That's absolutely incredibly amazing. So thank you so much for coming on to the Brighton Business Show. I think we could probably carry on talking for hours and hours, but we haven't got time, sadly. So thank you so much. I just wanted to ask, if people want to find Midnight, what's the best place for them to find you?
Our website is midnight.co.uk. And you can email us at hello@midnight.co.uk.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much. So this is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the March show, and we are celebrating International Women's Day and Choose to Challenge. So my next guest is the lovely Rebecca Kite. Now, Rebecca is a bus driving instructor for Brighton Buses. And she's not very old at all. So she's got an amazing story. And Rebecca, welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you.
Hello, thank you for having me on the show. It's an amazing opportunity. Thank you so much.
So we spoke very briefly earlier and you told me that you applied to be a bus driver at the age of 18. Is that right?
I did indeed. Yeah, as soon as I possibly could. That was my goal as a young child. It was my dream to become a bus driver. So as soon as I possibly could, straight away I applied.
Wow. And how has the journey been for you?
It's been absolutely incredible from the age of 18, beginning to sort of come into the industry and then learning to train how to drive the bus, which I passed my test just after my 19th birthday. And sort of the journey throughout from that time to now has just been sort of incredible from the off, really. I mean, I was in a driver for 4.5 years, and sort of in between that 4.5 years, I did a bit of driver mentoring. So when newer drivers came through, I sort of taught them the routes, ticket machine, all of that sort of stuff. So I had experience with a little bit of teaching then. And then back in 2017, I then came up to the training department to become a driving instructor. So I now teach people how to drive the buses.
Wow, that's amazing. And predominantly bus driving is a male dominated world, very different to what we've just been talking about with PR. I would imagine that most of your colleagues are probably men.
Yes, it is still quite male dominated. We are slowly but surely getting more women into the industry, which is amazing to see. It's something that I'm very passionate about, sort of getting more women interested into the roles and becoming a part of the industry as well. Over the last few years, I was actually used for part of marketing to encourage more younger women in back in 2014. So I was only 20 then. So I was sort of encouraged from then to help get more women into the industry. So it's something that we are still working on. We've currently got a Women in Bus network for the whole of Go Ahead Group, which I'm vice chair for. So that is part of the sort of mission that Go Ahead want. Their goal is by 2025 to have at least 20% of the workforce throughout the Go Ahead Group as women. So it's something that is actively being sort of looked at, and hopefully will change.
Would be absolutely amazing to see more women driving buses around Brighton and Hove. And I asked you this question actually before we came on the show, is that when you're instructing other drivers, what's the attitude to the fact that you're a woman teaching them how to drive buses? Have you experienced any issues or problems with that?
I've never ever had any negativity. Everyone's always been sort of really positive about it. So they've sort of been saying, oh, wow, it's amazing that you're so young and you're a woman and you're teaching all these people to drive buses. It's a very positive sort of attitude people have towards me. And it's really lovely that people are looking at it in a positive way.
Can I just ask you, Rebecca, how does it work teaching people to drive buses? Do you have a simulator?
We don't, unfortunately. We do sort of, we have in the past had open days at our depot. So if anyone wants to sort of come along and sort of have a little drive in the depot, see how it feels to drive a bus. We have done that in the past. Sadly, last year with COVID, they were all sort of put on hold, which was a real shame because we had some amazing events planned for that. But we have sort of the open days where people can trial it. And then sort of through the training, we do sort of classroom-based stuff. So we teach a little bit of classroom stuff. And then there are actually 5 tests you need to pass, but we help you to be able to pass them. So the knowledge sort of that we give will help you to pass all those tests and then eventually have your license at the end of the time that you're training with us.
So just like when you're learning to drive a car on the road, people mm-hmm. learning to drive a bus are on the road.
Yes. Yeah, so we do a bit of training in the depots first so people can get used to how the bus feels, how it manoeuvres, all of those sorts of things, because it does feel quite different to the car. So once we're happy that everyone's comfortable with sort of the manoeuvring of the bus, we then take them out on the road. We have dual controls as well, so we can stop the bus if we need to. But yeah, we sort of make sure people are happy and they're comfortable before we take them out on the road and things. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I struggle with a larger size car, so I would be absolutely terrible with a bus. But that, I'm just really interested to know.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's really fascinating, Helen, isn't it? I was wondering the same thing. Is there, you know, do you go to a big open area, you know, like a race course or something and drive the buses around there to get used to it first, or do you actually get out on the road? And you've answered that question. You do actually get out onto the road. Yeah
we do.
Yeah. So what is it that you really love about what you do?
I think the fact that, definitely because I was fascinated in buses from a young age, for me it was always something that I always wanted to do. I didn't really sort of tell anyone until I was in sort of my teenage years that that was what I wanted to do, because at the time it was kind of like, oh, you should be a teacher or you should go into law, something like that. And which for me, I thought, no, I want to be a bus driver. That's my passion. That's something that I really want to do. So it's sort of as soon as I was able to do it, I sort of said, right, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have a career being a bus driver. And then obviously I was lucky to have the opportunity to become an instructor as well. Mm. But the thing I love about it is, one, I love driving the buses anyway, because it's such an amazing feeling. Sort of you're driving through town or whatever and you think, oh my goodness, I'm driving a massive great big bus. Like, it's amazing, like, to be able to do that. But then also the other side of the job that I do, being able to then give people the knowledge and training for them to then be able to do it as well. So to be able to pass that knowledge on for something I'm so passionate about. I think that's the reason I love my job, because it's so rewarding when you've worked with a group of people and you get to the end of it and they pass their tests and you've been able to help them then go into a new job. It's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, and you've given them those skills, haven't they, that they can then, they will have those skills for life.
That's it, definitely. I mean, once you've learned how to drive a bus and you've passed your test, it is a skill for life, so you've always got that license.
And is it the same if you've got a bus driving license? Does that then mean you can drive an HGV, you can drive lorries and things like that, or is that a separate qualification?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is a separate qualification. But with the bus driving, you can also do coaches as well. So we do have the coaching side of it as well. That's part of Brighton and Hove and Metro Bus as well. Mm-hmm. So if someone sort of came in, started to do bus driving, but then a position came up within coaching, they could do that as well. So, I mean, there's plenty of avenues within the industry. Like, there's supervisory roles, there's customer service, there's managerial roles. There's so many opportunities. And I mean, it really is endless opportunities. You can go in whichever avenue you sort of want to.
Do you ever get the opportunity to go into schools and colleges to talk to the girls about bus driving?
I haven't yet. It's something that we were talking about, definitely, because I would love to be able to encourage sort of younger people that they can go into this sort of industry and do things. I mean, we do have apprenticeships as well, that do run. So there has been apprenticeships for the mechanical side of things as well. Mm-hmm. So we've had a couple of women come through the mechanic apprenticeships and also go ahead London side of it, do their driving apprenticeships as well. So there are different options as well.
Yeah. So have you had any challenges to face as a woman in your industry? Has there ever been a situation, it doesn't sound from what you've said so far, that you've ever had to face anything?
I personally haven't. I mean, as soon as I came into the industry, I fit in straight away. There was no sort of awkwardness of, oh, am I going to fit in? Because as soon as I sort of went into the position of being a bus driver, everyone just accepted me straight away. And similar to what Alex said earlier, it is a real family environment. And I think that in itself makes it such a fantastic job, because I feel like I've got a work family, and every day I think I'm so lucky to be doing what my dream is, and every day I love it. And I think to be able to say that, I think, is an amazing thing, because I mean, some people unfortunately don't get to do their dreams, but the fact that I live my dream every day, I think, is something that I'm very, very grateful for.
Yeah. And how amazing that you do love. And it's so obvious, it comes across that you are so passionate about what you do. So, of course, the question now for me is, what do you choose to challenge this year in 2021?
I definitely challenge the fact that sort of with me and what I wanted to do for a job, the initial sort of thought was, oh, should I do that, or should I do a job that people want me to do? And then I sort of thought, no, I'm going to do a job that I want to do. And I think that's what I want people to challenge, that if there is a job that they want to do, go for it. Absolutely go for it. Don't sort of go and do something just because someone has said to them, oh, you should do this or you should do that. If there is something you are passionate about, definitely go for it. And the fact that we really do want more women into this industry as well. And I've had women say to me when I've been driving buses, I don't know if I should do it. I really want to. Go for it. Absolutely go for it. Like, don't let the idea of it put you off. If there's something you're passionate about, definitely do it.
Definitely do. And there's been lots of, I mean, I know this is radio, so nobody can see, but all of us are sitting here nodding our heads going, absolutely, yes. If you're passionate about something, go for it. And I think I can definitely see that with my two girls that are teenagers. You know, they seem to have that attitude of, well, I'm just going to do what I feel I want to do, because why can't I? Mm. And it's really lovely to see our young women coming up through the ranks and actually embracing the fact that they can do anything they want to do. Yeah,
definitely. Because it's the main thing, really. If that's what people want to do, then they should do it. Definitely.
They should do it. So what's next for you, Rebecca?
Next for me, well, hopefully once COVID sort of sorts itself out and everything, we were hoping to put on a few more events upcoming soon with the Women in Bus Network. We hopefully should, because it's all virtual at the moment because of everything that's going on. Hopefully that will return to being actual events and we can do conferences again and sort of working out different things that we can do. And sort of on Brighton and Hove Metro bus, again, those sort of open days and encouraging people to come along, sit in the cab of the bus and see how it feels. Mm. So yeah, once sort of COVID and everything's sorted itself out, hopefully we'll be sort of back up and running and encouraging people to come and give it a go.
Fantastic. So if there are any young women or even older women, actually, why do I have to say just young women? Any women out there that are listening to this show, interested in becoming a bus driver, where's the best place for them to go?
So they can either go onto the buses website, which is www.buses.co.uk, where there is a web page which has actually got all the career information on it, and there's also a information page about my journey. So if anyone wants to read more about my journey, there is that page on there. But even if people want to send an email just to answer ask any questions, my email is rebecca.kite@buses.co.uk, so I'm always free to answer any questions that anyone may have.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Rebecca. That's been really lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So this is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, available on DAB digital radio and on a podcast too. So now I'm going to introduce our final guest for today's show, lovely Imelda Glackin, who is the CEO of the Martlets here in Brighton. Now, I spoke to Imelda. We had a very long chat, actually, the other day, just to understand a bit more about herself and what she does as a charity. And one of the things that she said to me about her job is that she has to live with a business head on a charity heart. And I just loved that comment. So Imelda, it's really lovely to have you here on the show with us today.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Helen. Nice to be here, and lovely to meet Flo, Alex and Rebecca. Very inspirational, yes. Lots to think about after what you've spoken about.
Lots to think about. So Imelda, tell us a little bit more about Martlets, because it's not just the hospice, is it? There are four elements of the business, as it were.
Yeah, well, I mean, for people who live in Brighton, I suppose most people think that everybody knows what Martlets is all about, but not everybody does, because Martlets is about supporting and caring for people who are approaching the end of their life. And that could be for many reasons. It could be because they have a diagnosis of cancer or any other life-limiting disease. It's for anybody from the age of 18 years and old and over. And what a lot of people think when they think of Martlets is they think of the hospice. Mm. And the hospice is an 18-bedded unit. And people do come into the hospice. They come in for symptom control. They come in for management and they go home. We have a higher rate of discharges than we ever do people who stay with us for a long time. The average length of stay is about 11 days. So people don't stay with us for very long. A lot of people want to be at home. Mm. So most of the care that's delivered by Martlets is delivered in people's own homes by our teams in the community. So that's our raison d'etre, the reason we exist as a charity has to always have a mission, a reason to exist. So our reason to exist in this city is we know that's the only one thing we're all sure of. There's only one thing we all know about ourselves, is that one day we will die. Yeah. And the other thing we all hold in common is we don't know when that day is going to be. And this last year, if anything, has really brought death and dying to the forefront, and the fear and the anxiety and the life-changing scenario that it creates. So for us, it's about being there for people at various stages of their journey. And in order to do that as a charity, we have to make sure that we can be sustainable, and we need to generate a lot of money every year to run our charity. So in order to do that, it's going back to your point, Lisa, that's what I said. I, as the CEO, have to put a business head on this heart that is full of compassion and care and love. And so running it like a business is really important. Mm. So we have a trading arm. So as you know, we have 8 shops in the city, all around the city. We have our charity shops. We have online shopping. We have our fundraising arm, which we run loads of events. You will all remember those amazing snow dogs and those amazing snails that just caused mayhem and joy in the city. I mean, that was amazing. And watch this space. They may come again. And then we also, I set up a care agency, a private care agency is another business arm for the charity just over 11 years ago. And they provide private care in people's own homes if they want it. Not end of life care, but a lot of people who want people to provide where they need care provided in their own homes. So it's got lots of facets to it. And I feel hugely privileged and hugely honoured to be in the role that I'm in. I say I've got the best job in town. Because, you know, it's an amazing group of people. We have over 250 staff. We have almost 600 volunteers, an incredible group of people. And we call ourselves Team Martlets.
Oh, there's a real theme here today, isn't there, about this whole family feel within business. And I wonder, is that more of a female thing? Because, you know, we're known for compassion, we're known for empathy. And I wonder whether that is what women can bring to the business place, the workplace. Is they bring that different side of things from perhaps a male dominated point of view?
I mean, I think it's probably a little bit like what Flo and Alex were saying about their industry, and opposite to where Rebecca is coming from. The care, health and social care industry is predominantly dominated by women. Because of that caring aspect, and because right from the beginning with Florence Nightingale, you never saw a man carrying a candle through, you know, along the bedsides. It was the role of a woman. So it's interesting we have evolved, but we still haven't evolved far enough. Yeah. And that role of where a woman stands and where she is and who she is, we're evolving that role, but there are still multiple assumptions around what roles women stand in and should stand in versus men. But equally, you know, we have men who are outstanding in caring and doing all of that as well. But it is predominantly within this area of, and especially within palliative and end of life care, as well as everything else. But I think a really interesting just in relation to International Women's Day, is we have all these role assumptions. We have all these gender assumptions that go with things. And a really classic one is around the whole understanding of how do we challenge culture, even culture in our own industry. And there's a story told about this surgeon who's just about to operate on this young man. And the surgeon stops and says, "I can't operate. That's my son." And everybody assumes that it's a man, that the surgeon is a man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a woman.
Mm.
So what I'm saying, even in our industries, there are certain positions and certain roles that we assume to gender, no matter how far we move ahead.
Oh, yeah.
And why is that? It's a rhetorical question, but it's one I'm constantly trying to challenge.
Yeah. Yes, and it is interesting, isn't it, how you will say a word and people automatically either jump to the fact that, well, it's like Rebecca that we've talked about. If you said, I'm interviewing a bus driver on the radio today, I would imagine that the majority of people would think that's going to be a guy. And exactly. And I suppose it's sort of, it flows the other way as well. When you talk about nursing and nurses, our automatic assumption is that is a female-led role. Yet there are some amazing male nurses out there that are doing a fantastic job. And it will be, yes, I think we're a long way off. Helen, I think you've unmuted and you wanted to speak.
Yes, I'd always get reminded of this, is the boardroom of ancestors in our heads. Mm. And that we can consciously, you know, and always move forward and tread new paths in the meadow. But those well-trodden paths are hard to erase. As much as we want to, it's there. It's part of our history. And it was really interesting the way that you presented that, Imelda, in terms of that story, because immediately a man just popped into my head, even though I'm very conscious about things like that. So really, really well presented in terms of that point, which just goes to show we do have a long way to go. Alex, I think.
Alex, yeah, please do come in and talk to us about.
I just an observation, really, that with two girls growing up, I was really acutely aware of even fancy dress costumes. You go into the shops, you know, all of the fancy dress costumes are nurses' costumes for little girls and doctors' costumes or construction outfits for little boys. Mm. And it's really heavily marketed that way, with the pink and blue and so on. And I think just right from an early age, those stereotypes are, you know, children grow up with that, and it's quite hard to then at a later age disentangle yourself from that.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. It reminds me of Alice Clover, who came to talk at Inspiring Talks Brighton when I was running it, and she had written a book, and the book was called Girls Love to Fart. And she has two little girls. And of course, when you talk about fart, and I don't know whether I'm allowed to say that on the radio, but I think I probably am, it tends to be a bit of a boy's thing, a boy snigger and a girl, but women do it the same as men. We just don't talk about it. But Alice was very keen on, you know, talking about things like that to her girls and not stereotyping, dressing them in pink and, you know, flowers and things like that, and allowing them to be whoever and whatever they wanted to be.
Interestingly, so you talk about your girls. Mm. And your families, and we all have assumptions about all of that as well. And so I have a 15-year-old son, and my wife and I have a real challenge sometimes with people assuming so much about us as women.
Yeah.
So we assume ourselves as women a lot. So, and that's why one of my challenges was going to be, I challenge all of us to challenge who we are as women,
yeah,
and who our roles are as women.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting to listen to my son sometimes, a little bit like the farting piece, Lisa. We all do it, whether we want to admit it or not. It's part of who we are, whether it's silent or loud, whatever it is. But sometimes it's if, you know, my son would see or hear us doing something, and his friends might come around and they might be quite surprised or say something. And he will challenge that. He'll say, why not? You know, they're my mums, they're two women, you know. He doesn't even realise that the bias is there. But then he goes out in the world and he sees it and feels it. And sometimes he'll bring it back. Mm. But I think we can do it ourselves very well.
Yeah.
Because, and I think I go back to assuming roles. So I had this fantastic coach at one time in my career when I was at various points. Very often we're always trying to find new ways of looking and exploring how we see and how we come across, etc. And she was a very, very successful woman in a big pharmaceutical company, and she'd been in it for several years. And she'd brought on an apprentice, this young chap, and she had developed and supported him. And a new role came up and he got it. And then the next role was coming up, which was her direct line management. And he went for the role and she went for the role and he got it. And she employed a coach to talk her through, you know, what exactly happened here? Why did he get the role? And so the coach started working with her. And the actual, what was revealed in 3 months of a coach shadowing her, for want of a better word, he said to her, you need to stop making the coffee. You need to stop making the coffee. Yeah. Because in those meetings, at the very beginning and at the very end of the meetings, that's when the deals were happening. That's when the introductions were happening. And yeah, she was making the coffee because she was nurturing. And you don't want to be, it's a beautiful part of who we are as women, that we have got that nurturing side. We shouldn't have to dampen it down or apologize for it, but it should be integrated, because we talk about diversity of thought, and diversity of thought includes both genders. And with diversity of thought, you get huge economic and social gains. And I think when we can really, truly blend that together and not apologize to the level, then I think we'll have arrived. But I don't think I'll be around when we actually arrive.
I think you're right. I think what's happened over the years is women have tried to become men in the workplace. You know, we feel that we have to dress like them, speak like them, act like them, and we don't. And I don't think that's helped us in our cause. Because then, when we do break down in tears, or when we feel empathy towards somebody, we act in a feminine way, we're seen as weak and we shouldn't be doing it. And actually, I think what I would love to see is that we're all of our wonderful abilities, male abilities and female abilities, are blended in that perfect, unique way.
Yeah, because when it's working well, and I think it is about regard and respect, and equality is a very big word, and I'm not sure we know what equality means on so many levels.
No, I don't. I agree with you there. I think the equality thing, it's a very difficult word because how can everything be equal? There's always got to be different balances.
People think things always hold different values and different positions. Mm. So you have to be I think we need to be very clear what we mean by equality. Yeah. And I think sometimes equality can be dangerous, because if somebody has equal responsibility, the other person might feel overburdened, or so, you know, it's sharing that around. But I think equality in terms of valuing, I think valuing difference, valuing sameness, valuing all of that is really important. Yeah. And, you know, it's a bit like our children and my son, certainly. I think, imagine if I'd grown up with eyes like him. Wow, that would have been absolutely amazing. I grew up in Ireland in a very Catholic country with a very small diversity, well, if anything, of people. And so my world, when I came out of that, it was quite something else. And women had a very specific role, but very strong women, because they were very matriarchal when I was growing up. So they had a very strong role, the woman did, in her family, but she didn't have the position that she deserved in her family.
Yeah.
And so my thing is, be the best version of yourself that you can, and whatever that is, not what anybody else thinks or wants from you, but as a mum, as a friend, as a colleague,
be that best version.
Yeah
absolutely. Martlets, as all business, we've all struggled over the last 12 months with COVID and everything else. And what's the focus now for you for 2021?
I think, like everybody else, Lisa, it's about recovery. And people are using the word it's a reset button, or some people are using the word it's an army term called decompression. How do we open that lid and come out of the submarine and go, oh gosh, you know, the world still exists, but this is what it looks like here. And I think we're all going to have to do that, and how do we adapt to a new way and in that recovery? Because from a financial point of view, from a psychological point of view, a mental health point of view, but also from a wellness point of view, what we do know is over the last year, a huge amount of people will have had a very late diagnosis with some cancer diagnosis or other chronic conditions, and they may have missed their opportunity to access treatment. So there's a whole new wave of people kind of come through, and we need to be there for them. But obviously, we need to ensure that we have the finances to deliver those services.
So how can the Brighton and Hove public help Martlets this year?
Well, Brighton and Hove Martlets belongs to the people of Brighton and Hove. I always say that. I'm here to look after it, but it belongs to the people of Brighton and Hove. So it is, without the people of Brighton and Hove, we wouldn't exist. And it's with our huge thanks and love that we say to them, gosh, you are the people. We need people to continue to support us in whatever way that is, whether it's volunteering, whether it's donating clothes, donating goods, donating money, giving us gifts in kind, volunteering people's professional services. All of that is absolutely. We have a whole. We say no to very little. There are some things we have to say no to, and some donations and some people who want to give us money if it doesn't fit with our values and our. From a brand point of view, we don't take anything, but we are very open to the generosity of our people, of Brighton and Hove, and how, no matter how little or how big that is. So our website is www.martlets.org.uk, or even if you just put Martlets Brighton and Hove into the Google bar, you'll find it. And you'll see our shops along the high street and various high streets. And so whatever people or even if they're just curious and want to know a little bit more, get in contact with us.
Excellent. Thank you, Imelda. And I know you did. You gave us a few challenges throughout the conversation we've just had. But what would be your choose to challenge for you personally for 2021?
I think my big one is still to choose to challenge assumptions and culture, because I think we pay lip service to it. And I will put myself on the line here. Sometimes I'm a little bit timid and a bit anxious or a bit scared to say it, because I might come across too girly or too much of a woman. I stand into those women's shoes and go, why not?
Absolutely. Why not? Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been fantastic to interview some lovely ladies today. Helen, do you have a few final words that you would like to share?
I'm just so inspired by all you incredible ladies, and, you know, the stories you're telling, the journeys you're sharing, the things that you're doing, the words that you're speaking. And I'm just feeling really, really inspired. So thank you.
Yeah, it's been a really great show, and I wish everybody very well for 2021 and for our reset and our recovery. And I think we do have that light at the end of the tunnel, and things are going to change. And we will all choose to challenge and make this world a different place. For me, my choose to challenge was really more around how women are seen. I would really like to challenge the fact that we're still very seen very much as what we look like. You know, do we have the right body shape? Do we have the right hairstyle? Do we wear the right makeup? Have we got the right shoes on? You know, is our waist size correct? And I want to choose to challenge that it's not about how we look. It's about who we are and how we feel. And we should embrace ourselves as we are. It's not about what we look like on the outside, it's about who we are in the inside, and that's my choose to challenge. I'm so fed up of the media, and it's all very well, isn't it, we can look at a male politician and we don't worry about whether his hair's a mess or his suit's crumpled and nothing ever gets mentioned. Yet as soon as you get a female politician on stage, it's like, oh, did you see that her shoes were from Prada and her handbag was here and she was wearing leather trousers? And you just think, oh, does it matter? it doesn't. So I'd like to thank you all very much for coming on the show today. So thank you, Helen, for being here. Thank you, Imelda. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Flo.
Thank you.
It's been great having you on the show. And so I am signing off for the March show of the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And we very much look forward to speaking to you next month.